You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
A trade taking place with the Grizzlies acquiring Justin Holiday from the Chicago Bulls for Marshawn Brooks, Wayne Selden, and 2 second-round picks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us all your texts, your voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you listen to the show. Number again is 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Matt, happy Friday to you. We have a great episode on hand, starting the weekend outright. The Bulls, they did it. They finally did it. They made a good move. Gar Foreman, John Paxson took the saying, new year, new me, literally, and decided to make some changes. But first and foremost, how you doing?
I'm a little surprised, Jordan. What's going on? I will eat crow here to start the episode. I laughed at you a couple weeks back when we were talking about Holiday's trade value, and you were adamant in thinking that the Bulls could get 2 second-round picks for him, and I said, no way. I guess we have to say,
I'm stupid, you're smart. I was wrong, you were right. You're the best, I'm the worst. You're very good looking, I'm not attractive.
To a certain degree, and we can get into all the nooks and crannies of what this trade means, and recent trade history of this team as we move forward here. But in a vacuum, it was impressive for the Bulls to get 2 picks for Justin Holiday, because when we were arguing about this a couple weeks ago, anything that Justin Holiday has done since then with his play has dropped his trade value. I didn't think Holiday was the Bulls would be able to get 2 picks for 2 second-rounders for Holiday 2 weeks ago, as his shooting slump was just starting, and his shooting slump has really continued and worsened over the last 2 weeks. So I thought there's even less of a chance that they could get 2 second-rounders for him now, because they were trying to presumably up his trade value by playing him more, because we're all sitting here saying, why the hell is Holiday getting so many minutes? There can only be one answer, and it's trying to up his trade value. They were doing the opposite because he was playing so poorly. So apologies to you. I can't believe that Memphis was willing to give up 2 second-rounders for this guy based on his play recently. But hey, when you're wrong, you're wrong, and I'll take that one.
Maybe that tells you what the market is for wings.
You know, Trevor Ariza already dealt a few weeks back to the Washington Wizards. That really tells you how little there is out there as far as value goes to pick up a wing. And look, I'm a little bit shocked too. You had mentioned it. Justin Holiday has been in a terrible shooting slump. He's shooting 29.8% from three in the fifteen games under Jim Boylan so far. Like, that is not good. Like, he started the season at 42%, which was really good. He was shooting a high volume of threes and making a pretty high volume of threes. The other thing that I was trying to figure out, I was like, okay, maybe this works for Memphis, and this is good for Memphis too, is they need somebody to come off the bench and score. Outside of the Bulls, the Memphis Grizzlies have the lowest offensive rating over the last 15 games in anybody in the league. I think 94.1. They're scoring about 95 points a game. So they needed scoring help, and maybe Justin Holiday can help them do that if he's not playing at 35 to 40 minute clip a night. So if Holiday's going to get 18 to 22 minutes a night with Memphis, and he's been a positive defensive box plus minus player this year. He's at a 1.5, which is zero is basically your line for average. Anything below that, you're a below average defender. Anything above it, you're an above average defender. Justin Holiday's been an above average defender as much as the eye test tells you the opposite. The stats have told you that he's been a positive part. So I think he's going to be good for the Grizzlies. And look, the Grizzlies wanted to shed Seldon. They wanted to shed Brooks. And they can afford to give up 2 second-round picks because they owe a top 8 protected first-round pick if they end up landing there this year. So I think that they want to get out of that realm and have to give up their first-round pick this year. That's kind of why they're going for it. But good deal by the Bulls. Really, really good deal by the Bulls.
Yeah. As I said, in a vacuum, it is impressive to think about what they were able to do as far as getting value for Justin Holiday. Then you start to branch out a little bit from this trade. And then, of course, the first thing that you think of is because they took on two players so that they could balance out contracts, they had to waive somebody, and they did officially announce last night that they waived Cameron Payne. Let's all take a brief moment to breathe a deep sigh of relief about that. But then you think, okay, good for the Bulls. They got 2 second-rounders. And because they had to take on 2 players in this deal, they wave goodbye to campaign. Hey, remember that campaign trade? And it's kind of funny that Doug McDermott and the Pacers are in town tonight because it is an even more fresh reminder that the guy that they waived to execute this Holiday trade to just take on a couple of second-round picks, which they may or may not use, you know, to actually draft players, or maybe they'll turn into hashtag cash considerations. But remember the campaign trade. The Bulls giving up Taj and Doug. One of them, yes, Taj on an expiring deal, but still, a player like Taj in his prime, playing very well. And Doug, who at the time was kind of a bust here in Chicago, but still had potential, at least as a three-point shooter in the NBA. And one of those second-round picks that the Bulls value so little to get campaign. And yes, Anthony Morrow, Joffrey LeVern, blah, blah, blah. They were castaways. Campaign was the point of that trade. And here we are, 33% shooting in a just shy of 70-game stint with the Bulls. Most of it was a running joke. And campaign was the butt of it. And so, yeah, a golf clap of worth of applause for in a vacuum, they get 2 second-rounders for Holiday. Will they actually use those second-rounders effectively? Will they say, oh, I don't know, have guys on their draft board when it's their turn to use these second-round picks? That'd be nice. And let's not forget that give them applause for this one, but boy, do they have some really ugly trades in their recent rearview mirror, too.
It's funny that this Cameron Payne trade, you can link this all the way back to when the Bulls traded Eddie Curry and Antonio Davis to the Knicks. Shout out to, on Twitter, NBA Sweatpants has documented this trade and how it's unfolded, and it's gone.
Oh, the trade flow chart?
Yes, you can trace it all the way back to Eddie Curry. It is. It's insane. Almost 10 years. That's 12 years worth of trades and moves that can be pinpointed back to Cameron Payne, Anthony Morrow, and Joffrey LeVern. But the other thing I wanted to say on Cameron Payne really quick, just kind of concluding this whole experiment that never was with him. Look, we took a lot of our anger and our hate for Cameron Payne out on him when I don't think that was necessarily fair. Look, he's been a terrible player here. He was not great when he's been able to play. He's been hurt multiple times. And there was a lot of unnecessary pressure for him to succeed in an environment that was basically impossible to do so. And I think we took a lot of our hate, the fans took a lot of their hate out on Cameron Payne when really all that hate should have been going to Gar Foreman, who's the one who wanted to trade for him. You trade a longtime vet in Taj Gibson, who everybody loved here. You trade a guy that in Doug McDermott, who you traded two first-round picks to move up for. That in combination of going after a point guard who somehow squeaked into the lottery in his draft class, couple that with the injuries, like Cameron Payne has had a rough go, and he sent out that tweet last night. It was just basically it's the hallelujah sign. It's like when you go up, when you just praise your hands up, and it sounds like he wants a different start here. Like, look, I was going back through his likes on Twitter last night, just a few of them. This dude has liked almost every bad comment made about him. So you, in part, you kind of feel bad for the guy, but at the same time, I mean, it was his own doing, too. He wasn't very good while he was in a Bulls uniform.
Told me Cameron Payne would make 7 threes in a game, I might have slapped you, Neil.
Yeah, you're right that he's kind of the symbol in human form of one of the biggest head-scratching, what most people would say pretty easily, without pause, mistakes on the recent track record of Bulls GM Gar Foreman. Because we all sat there when that trade went down and said, wait, what? So we all knew that Taj was kind of somebody they might look to trade because he was on an expiring deal and they didn't expect to re-sign him and he had earned himself a big contract. And Doug, that wasn't working out. Hey, there's another fun trade. Doug McDermott. So it's, you know, people talking about, man, look at what Gary Harris is doing in the NBA right now. Look at what Yusuf Nurkic is doing this season. And the Bulls traded up to get Doug and said goodbye to both of those guys. And then, it, you know, a bad trade begets a bad trade begets a bad trade. And as you said, works all the way back up to that Eddie Curry trade. Here's another factor, too. And yes, again, some of the campaign hate from the fan base is more probably accurately directed at Gar, and rightly so, but it's not like campaign won anybody over with his play. The other factor here, talking about, okay, well, now can the Bulls actually use these second-round picks that they just got, is reminding yourself that, so they got a 2019 and a 2020 second-rounder from Memphis. In 2019, that is getting back a 2019 pick, the second-round pick that they lost, sending it to the Lakers when they had to, remember the very brief Jose Calderon phase of our Chicago Bulls? They had to send a second-round pick to the Lakers in that Calderon trade so that they could, what? Free up money to sign Dwayne Wade, which, again, another very questionable at-best move by this front office. So it's like the more you dive into, okay, the Bulls got 2 second-rounders for Justin Holiday. How did we get here and what happens next? Everywhere you find these little nuggets of like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Oh my God, that happened. Oh my God, that happened. Because sometimes you just, there's so much drama with this Bulls team this season that it's easy to forget some of the little things and the nooks and crannies of what this managerial team has done to lead us to where we are now. So for the love of God, Bulls fans are hoping and praying that, okay, good for you, golf clap. You got 2 second-rounders for Justin Holiday when really his stock was plummeting and nobody was really expecting you to be able to swing a deal like that. Good for you. Please, please go make some use of it. Please make another good decision based off of this good decision.
The Bulls are untying knots that they've made for themselves, you know, a handful of years ago. You had mentioned it. I mean, this ties back to the Doug McDermott trade to Taj Gibson. It ties back to the fact that they had to free up money, so they had to trade away second-round picks. So I'm hoping that they do the same thing, too, is now that they've replenished their picks, they've added another one in 2020, that this is an opportunity to say, okay, maybe the way that we were trying to do it before wasn't working. So let's take some steps now to try to be in damage control mode for the rest of the season and see what we can get from that. So their next move, I'm assuming, is Chandler Hutchison's going to get the bulk of the minutes at the three. We're going to see a legit opportunity for him to play over the course of the next 45 games or so and see what he has, which I'm very excited about that. That on top of getting the 2 second-round picks from Justin Holiday makes this deal even sweeter. Getting finally just waving Cameron Payne makes this deal a little bit sweeter. It's a testament, too. I think we should mention this, too, as well. Shaq Harrison, who's come in here from the Suns just in the middle of the season, is coming here and earned a spot on this team. And he was the reason Campaign was pushed out. Campaign got a ton of opportunity this season to prove that he could keep a spot, even as a reserve guard on this team. And Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono both beat him out. So props to those two guys. But the other thing that I was thinking about, Matt, now that they're going to shift their focus to trying to move Robin Lopez and Jabari Parker, if they don't succeed in moving either of those guys, I still think at the end of the day, getting 2 second-round picks for Justin Holiday and freeing up that spot on the roster to move the guy you picked at number 22 to play the back half of your season and see what he's got, I think has been all worth it. So if they don't get anything done for Parker or for Lopez, I don't think I'm that upset.
And let's just keep an eye on this. As you say, the Bulls are probably not done with just over a month to go before that February 7th trade deadline, and certainly Robin Lopez and Parker, the two names that are still probably being shopped around. Don't be surprised if you see the Bulls take one of those 2 second-round picks they got from Memphis just now and package them in a trade to deal with the Jabari Parker exit. I'm just saying, don't be surprised if that happens.
I mean, what's the point of doing that, though, if you can just buy him out? Like, why give up an asset that you just acquired?
You ask a valid question, sir.
Well, that would be the main question if they decided to do that. If there's a reason why you're coupling a second-round pick with it, maybe you're getting a player back that you have some hope in. But those are far and few between, and nobody's trading a player asset and one that you would want to acquire on a rebuilding team for Jabari freaking Parker. Nobody's doing that. So it would be wild to me, but I guess I can't say it's out of the realm of possibility that they decide to package one of these picks. But to me, that would just be nonsense if it's just about getting him off the team.
Here's what I was thinking, though. So say you package Robin Lopez with Jabari Parker. And of course, you know, there would have to be multiple players involved in this trade to balance contracts, especially with Jabari. But, you know, Rolo, what's he? I think he's making like $13 or $14 million this season. So say the Bulls throw in a couple of second round picks for some deal that allows them to get Jabari out of town and Rolo off the books, and maybe the Bulls get a first round pick back. Because I don't think, and I think you would agree with me, Jordan, likelihood of the Bulls getting a first-round pick for Jabari Parker or Robin Lopez, slim to none. Just like straight up slim to none. That's not happening. I don't think either of those guys can get you a first-round pick back in any kind of trade. Unless the Bulls are taking on a huge, gross contract, and we've already said, and we've already heard, they don't want to do that. So maybe if you package Rolo and Jabari and a couple of those second-round picks, a team might be more inclined to send a first-round pick back the Bulls' way. That's what I was thinking about.
It's maybe. I just don't see it for Parker, who I guess if you're really that desperate to make the playoffs this year and you need some scoring, then maybe Parker is your option. But I'm thinking about all the teams that need that, and there's maybe 2 or 3 teams, and one of those teams could be blowing it up in a week or two, and that's the Washington Wizards. The other team I thought about was the Charlotte Hornets. You know, there's been rumors that they want to get rid of Frank Kaminsky, and they want to shed the Nick Batum contract. Batum's owed like somewhere between $25 and $27 million per year over the next 2 years. Like, if you want to do that and you want to get a first-round pick from the Hornets, that might be an idea, but then you're taking on Batum you could use right away. He would be a plug-and-play type of guy, and I think he would be halfway productive for this Bulls team, if that's the route you want to go. Kaminsky is just he's a reserve big man, and you can use him in stretches, fine. But more so than anything else, he'll be off the books after the the season's over. But more so than anything else, I think you're going to have to take on bad money in order to get that first round pick. First round picks are so valuable right now in the NBA. And I don't think coupling a second round pick or even 2 second round picks with Parker or Lopez commands you a first round pick.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think it's an outside shot. And I would agree that first round picks are so highly valued these days that it would be challenging for the Bulls to get one in any kind of deal that's sending away Parker or Lopez. And especially if the Bulls are still in the same mode as far as what's been reported, that they really do not want to take on long-term bad money. I would agree that it would be very hard to get a first-round pick. At the same time, I'm sitting here just being so skeptical of how they make use of those second-round picks. Because Bulls fans can joke about how, cash considerations and the whole Jordan Bell fiasco with the Warriors and using money to get rid of the Rondo buyout and using money to cover up mistakes and this team valuing money more than they value winning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And also knowing that when they do take swings on second round picks, and not just the Bulls, but a lot of teams across the league, it's hard to find real NBA talent in those later rounds. It's not impossible. For every 9 misses, there's 1 Isaiah Thomas, et cetera, et cetera. It's not impossible, but it's very hard. And I mean, who's the latest second round pick that's come through this Bulls organization and actually played minutes for them? Paul Zipser,
who we're high on.
I'm just saying, good for them for getting 2 second rounders for Justin Holiday. I am just now looking forward to seeing how they make use of them. And I swear to God, if they keep those second round picks and don't move them in subsequent trades and then end up trading them away on draft night for some reason, and one of the reasons they provide is, well, we didn't really have anybody on our board at the time. I mean, I got pissed off at that excuse when it happened, and if they try and use that excuse again, I will lose my freaking mind.
I don't know. Maybe they haven't realized, but I would hope that they have at least realized a little bit that maybe we should be looking at our second-round picks. And I'm fine if they don't take the player. Just like you said, use them productively.
Right.
Find a way. Give us a reason why you're doing that, and for good reason for the basketball team, not for your pocket. So even if they don't draft the player, just find a way to be productive with the 2 second-round picks you've added that you decided to waste over the last couple of years. So all we can do here is sit and cross our fingers. But overall, I think this was a good deal. And as much as anybody will tell you in Bulls Nation is we needed this. It's been a rough 6 weeks. All the injuries, the coaching changes, and the player mutiny, and this team looks terrible, and all of this stuff. I think we needed a small win, and that's what we got last night.
Well, and the other real silver lining here, which I don't think we've touched on yet, is that the departure of Justin Holiday, who was getting so many friggin' minutes, hopefully means there is a huge window of opportunity here for Chandler Hutchison, our other first-round pick from the 2018 draft, because you and I have talked about how Hutchison has looked better in his last handful of games. He's looking a bit more aggressive on the offensive end. He's still very, very competent as far as rookies go on the defensive end, and certainly shows a lot of hustle and effort on that end. He's a solid rebounder. We want to see Hutch get more minutes. Holiday getting moved allows the Bulls to do that. And per our friend Casey Johnson of the Chicago Trib with a tweet moments ago, it looks like at this morning shoot-around, Hutch was running with the starters and Archie Diacono with the reserves. So based on that, we could be seeing tonight for Jim Boylan against the Pacers, Hutchison inserted into that starting lineup and not necessarily needing to put him at the 4 in some of these super small lineups we've seen from Boylan recently to get him more minutes because they were so concerned with getting Holiday his minutes. That, I would say, even more so, if not just equal value of getting the 2 second rounders, is Hutchison getting this opportunity.
Just another thing from Casey Johnson real quick is Wayne Selden Jr. looks like he's going to get some run. So he was I mean, pretty damn athletic in college. You remember his uncle Anthony? I had to tweet it out from our Locked On Bulls account. I said that the Bulls also named Wayne Seldon's uncle. He's the one that, if you remember, a few years ago at Kansas, he had the big clock and it was Seldon time, and it had a picture of Wayne Seldon with his arms, the whole thing, mm-hmm. just going absolutely nuts. He is now in charge of the Spirit and Passion Committee here in Chicago. So congratulations to Uncle Anthony on his recent promotion. But in all seriousness, they're going to give a look at Seldon. I don't think it's almost certain Marshawn Brooks isn't going to get a look. They're going to try to find another place for him. So I don't know. I don't think Wayne Seldon's going to be a world beater. He's going to be a marginal impact player at best, but give him a shot. Same thing with Hutchinson. You drafted him for a reason. You gave him that draft promise a month before the draft. So play him.
Yeah. I think it's also funny that Marshawn Brooks was involved in this trade after being a part of the which Brooks is it fiasco of the trade that never was from a couple of weeks ago with Memphis and Phoenix. God, that was hilarious. But yeah, so it sounds like the Bulls are going to look to turn him around immediately, and he probably won't even see the court at all in a Bulls jersey, Will Marjon Brooks. But as far as Seldon, yeah, I mean, interesting, kind of young part of his career, journeyman in the NBA so far. 32 appearances off the bench for Memphis this season, averaging 5.4 points, 1.1 assists, not a whole hell of a lot there. No, interesting to note because, you know, the Bulls need all the shooting help they can get in that backcourt. He shot 40% from downtown last season, averaging 3.5 attempts per game. This season, that has dipped down to just 31% on 2 attempts per game. So a little bit of a downswing from Seldon from the field so far this season. We'll see if a change of scenery might help that out.
Bulls have the Pacers tonight. Doug McDermott, ironically, in town tonight. Looks like he might play as well. So there's some interesting matchup things going on, too. It's like, how is Boylan going to use this team now? Is he going to run Dunn, Archie Diakono, Levine with Hutchinson coming off the bench, or is he just going to go straight after it and going Dunn, Levine, and Hutch and see what you have? Like, personally, and I think I speak for a lot of Bulls fans when I say you'd just rather see Dunn, Levine, and Hutchinson out there. Like, those are your guys. Like, Archie Diakono's great, but he's not a starter, man. Like, put the guys out there that you have potential starting legit rotation minutes involved here. We know what Ryan Arcidiacono is. We don't need him out there to start with the unit. But at the end of the day, starting and coming off the bench isn't all that big of a deal. More so about the minutes total. But for me, I'd rather see Dunn, Levine, Hutchinson play in that backcourt as opposed to Arcidiacono starting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Archie filled a very necessary hole for a while when the Bulls were so shorthanded and Dunn was on the shelf. But, and you know, we found out that just nothing good comes from playing campaign. So, like, he had to play minutes. But especially as Archie Diakono's three ball has started to fall off because he was shooting the three ball really well for a stretch there. Yeah, he's a gritty guy and he's a tough-nosed defender and he puts a lot of effort and spirit and all of those Jim Boylan-ish kind of words into his effort and his game on a nightly basis. But yeah, especially now that he's three ball struggling, there's really not a whole lot of reasons to have him on the court over Chandler Hutchinson. So we've seen a lot of small ball recently with some combination of Archie, Shaq Harrison, Chris Dunn, Campaign, and Blakeney getting minutes, and three of those guys being on the floor at the same time, and sometimes even like we've seen a couple of like four guard lineups out there. I would say now moving forward, give Chandler Hutchinson a look in as many different rotational like sets and lineups as you can, and give Chandler Hutchinson a good chunk of minutes. Obviously, he's going to eat a lot of Holiday's minutes, and that's good. But as far as who's starting, you know, who gets a variety of looks in a variety of lineups, give me Chandler Hutchinson every time over Archie.
I think as the season goes on, like even when Portis comes back, outside of Hutchison, you're going to see some relatively smaller lineups. Like, LaVine is going to have to be the quasi three off the bench. Like, when Portis comes back, and Hutch has been playing more minutes at the four than he has the three this year. He's been playing 55% of his minutes at the four. I assume that's going to change, especially when Portis comes back. And Portis could be back as early as this weekend. We're not 100% on that, but he was going to go through full contact practice today. So crossing my fingers, maybe he'll be back tonight. If not, maybe sometime this weekend. But when he does come back, you're going to see some weird, I think you're going to see some weird shifting, and you're still going to see a lot of fluid lineups out there. I don't think that anything is set in stone yet, because Justin Holiday was kind of a glue, like, as weird as it is to say, he was kind of a glue piece for this team this year already. Like, the guy that was commanding the second most minutes behind, I think, LaVine this year. If not, he was the number leading the Bulls in minutes.
No, I'm pretty sure Holiday will check out as leading the team in minutes.
So there's gonna have to be some fluid changing here. And I think, you know, over the next few weeks, we're just gonna have to deal with that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Boylan has his lineup set and that's what he's gonna go with. But I would assume with getting Portis back and having to figure out how to use Hutchison effectively, there's going to be some weird lineups we're going to see at times. So I'm interested to see how Boylan uses this going forward.
Yeah, I think Boylan, especially knowing that this team is pretty much dead in the water, like, he still wants them to compete, and he would still like them to win some games. And he's, you know, 5-9 in the same. So he's, you know, he's gotten the same number of wins in 10 fewer games than Fred Hoiberg did, because Fred was fired when they were 5-19, and now I think Boylan's 5-9. So obviously he'd like to get some wins, but first and foremost for Boylan, assuming he is trying to lock this job down for next season, and that's a whole other topic, but that's his goal. So what he needs to do is figure out which rotations work. So I would not at all be surprised. In fact, I would expect to see, now that Holiday is gone, a lot of different lineup looks from Boylan to see what works well chemistry-wise, and Hutchison to be a big part of a lot of different kinds of lineups, because that's a lot of minutes to fill.
All right, let's get to some voicemails here before we wrap up this show. You can always drop us one at 331-979-1369. Text messages there too. So if you got some thoughts on this deal, you just want to give your opinion, maybe you got some thoughts on the Pacers game tonight or the conclusion of the Pacers game, our line is always open. That's 331-979-1369. Let's get into it.
Hey, Matt and Jordan. This is Dan from New York calling in. Been listening to you guys since the very beginning. Appreciate all you do. I've texted in a couple times, but I just had to call tonight. Like, I'm fuming over here seeing that Wendell Carter got benched after 13 minutes, never came back in the game. How do you do that? I mean, the guy is having a rough game. He's young. You got to encourage him. You can't. He's going to be frustrated. He's the type of guy that seems like he can get down on himself easily. And for Boylan to do that, it just is a real head scratcher. And I don't know how he's going to go through the season like this. Like, that's just another way to piss off these young guys. You got to encourage them, you know. Like, I don't know. I've had it with this guy, and I know you guys are probably pissed off about this too. But anyway, let's hear what you say about it. Love the show. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Hi, this is Nicholas from the Syracuse area, New York. I just wanted to touch base with you two about the call from the coach. He had this idea that having Wendell Carter Jr. coming off the, going back onto the bench and sitting and watching everyone play, as this is a young core, how does that help him become a better player without experience? I just don't understand the, Jim Boylan is just not the coach for this job, and I just don't understand what is going through John Paxson and Guy Foreman's thought process when they're trying to get the young players to play the game. And the thing is, too, is like, if you want him to learn from experiences rather than have him sitting on the bench when you have, like, Robin Lopez, all these veteran players, why aren't you playing the younger players in spare minutes, extra time? I just don't understand the concept. Well, thanks for having me, and I hope to hear from you.
All right, thanks for the call from both Nick and Dan. We combined both of your calls because basically you guys are airing out your frustration about Carter's minutes the other night. So we wanted to hit both of these questions on top of their heads. So, Matt, we kind of aired our frustrations the other day on the episode asking why Carter was only playing that amount of minutes. Is it beneficial to be playing him in garbage time? Do you learn anything that way? And then we kind of explained what Boylan had said post-game, is thinking that you need to have some introspection and you can learn some things from the bench. How do you think Boylan's trying to approach Carter and being and having a developmental avenue to him? Because I'm trying to think of it from Boylan's perspective here. It's like, how, like, you know, it's very crucial in these next, this season and next season, if you're going to be the head coach, to not only develop and continue to push Markkanen along, but also Carter is like really your key to success, isn't he? Like, isn't that the guy that you know is very versatile? You don't have to do much on defense. So what all it's really about is building up his offensive game and keeping him moving on the development line we want him on. So I'm trying to approach this from Boylan's perspective, and I'm like, I don't really know what he wants to do, and I don't know if punishing him by making him sit on the bench is the best route to go. But hell, what do I know? I've never been an NBA coach before, so I can see the frustration from the fan base, but at the same time, like, Carter couldn't have taken this any better than he has, and he's been putting some of the blame on himself. But do you think that's a kickback to Carter, and this could have longer term effects about getting down on a young guy? He's going to be down on his game and ultimately affecting what he's doing the rest of the season.
I mean, yes, it was frustrating, and you know, I can sympathize with our callers as to what it felt like to only see 13 minutes for Wendell in that game. And look, you can say, as Jim Boylan, you know, I felt like some introspection was good for Wendell there, and learn by observing and watching to see what you were doing wrong, whatever, whatever. Look, Wendell is not the reason the Bulls lost that game by nearly 30 points. Wendell is not the reason, the primary reason at least, that they were down 16 after one quarter. That is just flatly not true. He was not the biggest culprit for a lackluster effort on your home floor once again from this Bulls team. You can't put most of that on Wendell. So I understand the frustration there. And I understand Bulls fans saying, what the heck is Boylan talking about with this, oh, introspection and like punishing Wendell and treating him like a kid for making a mistake? Whereas, you know, Blakeney got plenty of minutes in their game against Orlando, and Blakeney had plenty of possessions where, you know, Mr. Good old Reliable, I'm going to take this ball and I'm going to shoot it without even thinking for a split second about passing it. You know, Blakeney was not punished in any way by Boylan as far as sitting him on the bench. Blakeney got plenty of minutes, almost twice as many minutes as Wendell, even though Blakeney was his same old self, jacking up shots and playing outside of a team system of basketball. Hilariously so, almost. So there is some kind of disconnect there as far as the way Jim Boylan appears to be treating Wendell versus how he's treating other people on this team. But I will say this too. I'm not going to panic from one game. And I know you might say, well, it's a larger sample size than just the one game where he benched Wendell after only 13 minutes. And look at Wendell's offensive dip in production in Boylan versus under Hoiberg. And sure, I'll grant you that. But we still have 40-some games of basketball to play. And we've been pretty hard on Boylan over the last couple of weeks based on what he's been trying to do with this squad and how he's been treating his players. And I think a lot of that criticism is justified. But I also can see that Wendell handled this very maturely, and Wendell also admitted that he wasn't having a very good night and that he wasn't being a very positively impactful player on the court. So I'm not worried too much because Wendell, as I just said, is a very mature player for his age. So I'm not going to get all bent out of shape if he has a night where Jim Boylan says, hey, man, it's not your night, you know, on to the next one. But if this is an ongoing trend where if Wendell really isn't in that deep of foul trouble and for some reason Boylan only plays him 15 minutes or so, then yeah, for me it'll start to be a problem. But I'm not going to make a problem out of it for this one time.
Yeah, and this is part of this is Carter figuring it out too. It's like, dude, you got to stay on the floor and not pick up two or three fouls in the first half. Like, that's partly on you. So I know the refs have been tough. I've tweeted out videos where I said I don't think Carter's getting fair calls. That's all fine and good, and you can we can sit here and make excuses all season for it. But it goes back, like, Carter's the guy playing. So I don't think I'm bent out of shape really about his stats this season so far either. It's been kind of an up and down year. It's been a weird year. So part of it's on Carter, but I think I agree with you too. If this is just a circumstance of, dude, just take a seat, we'll go after it on Friday night against the Pacers, that's fine. But yeah, if it's a continuing trend of, like I had mentioned maybe a couple days ago, is using the Bulls bench as kind of like a timeout for players, like, that's where I'm not cool with. But if Carter, if it's going to take a season to figure out what the hell we're going to do, and maybe this back half of the season when this Bulls team is fully healthy, knock on wood, will help spark something in Carter, then maybe we just got to be patient. And that's, I think, the biggest key is just be patient with Carter. And I agree 100% with you too. He's taken every mature approach to this season. And for a young player to do that, I don't know how many other young guys would be able to sit here and handle the way that this team has rocked back and forth and the roller coaster ride it has been just in the first 38 games of this season. Like, it's been a tough stretch for Carter. So I think it's partially on him. It's partially on Boylan. But getting fully healthy and actually learning how to play with Markkanen, Levine, Dunn, and when Portis comes back, I think it's all going to benefit Carter. We just got to be patient.
Let's remember that Wendell had good games and bad games under Fred Hoiberg. And we're seeing Wendell have good games and bad games under Jim right. Boylan. So, you know, I'm not too worried. And maybe the treating him like a kid thing and the introspection lecture is the more worrisome part. But we have seen good Wendell and bad Wendell this season under both coaches. And I think mostly that's just a rookie, a very young rookie, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And he's going to have good nights and bad nights, and fans just have to roll with it.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it was against the shitty Wizards who were playing like half a G League team. But I mean, just a week ago, 17 points, 13 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 3 blocks, and only 2 turnovers. Like, that's a really freaking good game from Wendell Carter Jr. So yeah, just it's about stacking those games. And most importantly, like, Carter has been in a ton of foul trouble. Like, look at all the games under Boylan so far. I think he's averaging like 4.5 fouls a game. It's just trying to find a way to help. He needs help. That's what he needs on defense, not to pick up these ticky-tack fouls. He can stay on the floor. And if he can stay on the floor, then I think he can do good things. So thanks for the call. Let's just be patient. Let's not try to bend ourselves out of shape on every little thing Boylan does. And I know it's very hard to do as a Bulls fan, but let's be patient with Carter. I think I trust the player that he is and the basketball IQ that he is going to figure this out at some point. All right, let's get on to our next caller. This one's from Jacksonville.
Hey, Jordan, Matt. This is Jeremiah. I'm from Chicago, living in Jacksonville right now. Just want to say that I've been watching you, or I should say listening to the podcast for about 6 months now. Just want to say it is everything I look for. I look forward to new episodes, and I appreciate great content. But to my question, it's been a while since we've contended for a championship, let alone, been to the finals. But with the roster that we have currently constructed, how long do you think it'll take until we compete for a championship, let alone make a trip to the finals and actually win one? Thanks, guys. Appreciate the great content. How many years until it takes for us to be on top, though? Thanks, guys. Happy New Year.
All right, thanks for the call, Jeremiah, from Jacksonville. So this is kind of an open-ended question. I don't have an answer for you. Like, right now, we're so early in the rebuild that I can't give you a definitive timeline because things change so quickly. I think I had a clearer picture when Hoiberg was around, but now that we've inserted a brand new head coach into the mix, like, the timeline's kind of all over the place. So I can't give you a definitive answer right now, but I think the first step would be acquiring a star. that would be the very first step.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that we can say definitively, it won't be next year. Certainly not this year, won't be next year. You know, maybe the Bulls make a stride next season and start to look more like a team capable of making the playoffs in a weak Eastern Conference. Hopefully that happens next season. And then from there, you never know how much potential is reached and how many of these young players go on to hit their ceilings and become all-star caliber players. I'd say that it's not a guarantee for anybody at this point on this Bulls roster to reach that height of all-star caliber play. It's possible. It's far from a guarantee. So as far as when is this team going to get back to the finals, when are they going to be a championship team again, nobody has a freaking clue. Not me, not Jordan, not the people running the team. Nobody knows. People are wondering if you know, the Warriors are going to break up and this is going to be their last run this season and they're struggling. You know, they've been dropping games left and right. Nothing lasts forever in the NBA. And as much as it is about the Bulls figuring out where this rebuild goes, it's figuring out where the balance of power in the NBA goes beyond this. So in the subsequent seasons that the Bulls are rebuilding, what else is happening around the league? And which team looks like the team that is the team to beat? And is it in the East or is it in the West? And all of those factors will be a part of it. So right now, I'd say the only thing that we know confidently is the Bulls are, I would say, at least 3 years away from legitimate championship from legitimate playoff contention, counting this season. So I would be surprised if any earlier than the 2021-22 season, the Bulls are making noise in the playoffs. That's what I would say.
I think that's a fair estimate. And I think they can be fun. They can be fun next year. Like, they don't have to be a playoff team to be interesting to watch or to be a fun young team. And that's kind of what we were hoping they were going to be this year. And it's been delayed, so maybe that's what we see next year, and then the year following that. Maybe that's when we seriously consider playoff talk, and the championship thing I just think is too wide open right now to really pinpoint any type of timeline. Thanks for the call, though. I really appreciate it. All right, final call of the day. This one comes from Boston.
What's up, guys? This is Chris from Greater Boston. I just want to call in and inject a little bit of positivity for everyone jumping ship on the Bulls right now. And I think by June 20, when we're picking our star wing of the future, we'll forget every 24-second violation, every 30 piece we got, and every post-game Boylan interview. But I think this season we knew we still needed another star, and it probably have to be from the draft. The way we're going to get to the lottery might actually be the best way possible, because it's not because any core players got seriously injured or aggressed, because we are literally being sabotaged into having the best lottery odds we could possibly have with the amount of talent on our team. By the end of the year, I think while we may not have developed a lot of winning schemes, we'll still have a good core and get the top pick we needed. And hopefully, God, please, we'll just get another coach besides Boylan. I don't know if it'll happen, but as long as we get that pick, I think we'll be okay. In the meantime, I'd like to propose a drinking game that might make these next few road games a little more bearable. So every time Rolo gets a post play, drink. If Boylan slows down a fast break, drink. And every time Blakeney shoots before passing, drink. I think I'll be able to forget about these Bulls games a little bit easier. But anyways, thanks for the show, guys. You guys do an awesome job. Go Bulls.
All right, thanks for the call, Chris. I agree with him. I think this is kind of what we said when Bulls fans were kind of at the brink of saying, you know what, I'm completely done. That's kind of what I was saying before, like about a month ago. I was like, you know, we knew we had to rebuild. Like, the expectations of making the playoffs this season, if you had those types of expectations, you knew you were going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
You were going to be disappointed. And so that was a lot of false hope. And I think some of that is partly in the front office to blame. They gave some of these fans false hope by signing Jabari Parker and making it sound like he was going to be another piece to potentially push this team to a playoff spot. I think that was a lot of false hope. And then we got some bad luck. We had injuries to main guys for the first 24, 25 games of the season. That's a quarter of the season. That's over a quarter of the season. That also puts a wrinkle in a lot of people's expectations. So if you sat here and said this team could be fun, maybe they'll win 30 to 35 games this season, and then we'll get another lottery pick and we can add to that. Even with all the bad shit going on right now, he does bring up a good point. this summer could be a lot of fun. The Bulls could potentially have the number one pick. They have a serious chance of getting a top three pick this year. So bear through these next 45 games or so, and there's some type of light at the end of the tunnel for such a roller coaster of a season this year. So I definitely agree with Chris. And then on top of that, the drinking game is fantastic. Matt, how long do you think it would take if you're taking shots in this game, how long do you think it takes to the point where you're blacked out playing under Chris's rules?
Oh, man. I am too old for the drinking games involving shots these days. I'm not a big shot taker these days. I think the funniest part, though, is, okay, so every time Rolo posts up, take a drink, funny. Every time Boylan slows down a fast break, that's funny. The one that I think would kill people is every time Blakeney shoots before passing. We were just talking about Blakeney and his performance in Orlando, and, you know, why was Wendell in Boylan's doghouse and Blakeney wasn't? If you had to take a shot every time Blakeney shoots before passing, you would be blackout within 10 minutes of Blakeney being on the floor. Like, that's terrifying. So it's a fun idea, but it's dangerous. I'm going to go on record right now saying that Jordan and I do not endorse this drinking game from our caller, Chris, but we appreciate the creativity. I am not now, nor will I ever, taking a shot every time Blakeney shoots the ball. That is a suicidal idea. To your point, though, I think what you were saying earlier about not knowing where this Bulls rebuild goes and how quickly it can get back to contention has to do with them still getting another star caliber player. And that's kind of what Chris is talking about here. Playoff expectations this season were foolish. Even if healthy, I'm sorry, they were foolish. The expectation I had this season was getting another blue chip lottery pick. And right now the Bulls are fourth in those lottery standings behind, I want to say, Cleveland, Atlanta, Phoenix. Atlanta has Cleveland has 8 wins. Atlanta and Phoenix have 9. Bulls have 10. They need to add another star caliber player, whether it's Zion, whether it's RJ Barrett or Cam Reddish or some of the other non-Dukies that are at the top, projected top 10 picks right now. They still need to add talent that has star potential, and as you said, that right now far more likely to come through the draft than through free agency. So that's where we are, and I think Chris makes a good point with that. You got to find the positives. The Bulls are in position to add another blue chip lottery talent to this young core. That's a
Matt, just while we're touching on the tankathon standings and, you know, where teams are sliding up and down, you're right, they are fourth. They are a game behind the New York Knicks, who have lost 8 in a row. 8 in a row, the Knicks have lost. They're third. The Phoenix Suns have lost 4 in a row. They're at second at 9-30. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers are at the top, losing 7 in a row. They've only won 1 in their last 10. So the Bulls have played better brand of basketball than a lot of the bottom teams have over the last 10 games. But if the lottery started today, the Bulls would have a 48.1% chance at the top 4 picks, and they'd have a 12.5% chance at the number 1 overall pick, as opposed to the maximum 14%. So not all bad, but the other thing I wanted to mention real quick too is we've got 3 guys that could potentially be lottery picks this summer that have played their last game of college basketball this season. Bol Bol just went down with an injury, and he's not going to be back for Oregon. Darius Garland for Vanderbilt has gone down with a season-ending injury. Kevin Porter Jr. from USC, he's down with an injury, and he's not going to be back for the rest of the season. So I think now to the end of the season is very, very important to stay in that top 5. Because, and look, a lot of prospects would rise and drop among the draft board over the next few months. We saw it last year a ton. But still, you never know. And do you want to have to be in that 6-8 range where you might have to take a chance on a guy that hasn't played in a handful of months? So I don't think we want to be in that scenario. So the Bulls can win games. Just stay in that top 5 for us. How about stay in that top 5 for us and we'll be all right.
Please, God. You know, ideally, ideally they get the number 1 pick and they can have their pick of the litter. And, you know, insert joke here on how much you have faith in the Bulls and their drafting. But if there's one thing this front office has done well over the years, it's hit on first round draft picks. So, yeah, I guess it's not the end of the world if the Bulls end up drafting 4th or 5th. as opposed to in the top three. But to me, like, this is a shallower draft than last season. They're not getting a Wendell caliber player at seven. That's just not happening. So that's kind of the give and take of where we are right now. Jim Boylan, you know, is going to try and win as many games as he can. And he is going to instill in his players, or at least try, some kind of confidence and some modicum of we still have something to play for. We're still trying to get better. We're still trying to prove that we can compete against all the other teams in this league. And if they do stay healthy, it sounds like Bobby Portis, speaking of, has been ruled out tonight, but is expected to return probable on Sunday against Brooklyn. So we're talking about, outside of Denzel Valentine finally having all of our pieces back, just how much better do they get? Because at least with their added defensive intensity and slowing these games down, yeah, they got blown out against Orlando. They got, you know, there have been a handful of blowouts under Boylan, but for the most part, they're sticking in games because they're muddying them up. And as I said earlier, Boylan has as many wins in 14 games as you know, Hoiberg had in 24. So there are probably going to be some more wins in this back half of the season. But just like last season when Sean killed draft pick and the guys were balling, you say, all right, how much are these wins going to cost us as we make our way through the back half?
Friggin' Sean Kill draft pick, man. That guy came in here and lit it up for like 3 weeks, dropped us down to, I mean, and we even had the luck where we flip-flop spots with the Kings. And had we not done that on the coin toss, the Bulls would have drafted second last year. But that's neither here or there, and I don't want to piss off Bulls fans doing that going into the weekend.
Yeah,
but
let's not relive that, shall we?
next week, we'll try to get on a college basketball writer or maybe two to kind of break down some of these prospects. We're at the turn of the year now. We're at the start of the new year, which means we're getting closer and closer to the NBA draft, getting closer to March Madness. So we need to check in with some writers and talk to us about some of these guys in the top 10, because that is clearly where the Bulls are going to be picking this season. So we'll talk about each prospect and maybe give you guys a little bit more inside information to pay attention to in the coming months. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to all of our callers, our texters. You can do that at any time, 24/7, 365. 331-979-1369 is the number to hit us up. Text messages and voicemails. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, we're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces. Even if the value is just slightly higher?
No, it's not. I'm telling you, it's not.
So you don't think you can't get 2 second round picks?
No.
You can't get at least 2 second round picks for Justin
Absolutely
Holiday.
Not. No, they might get one. Two? No way. I'm not trying to hate on Justin Holiday, man. He's having a great season. He's probably having one of the better seasons of his career, especially with that 3-point percentage. But no. Another factor here is that is this Bulls front office not great at the negotiating table. Not great.
I mean, that has nothing to do with Justin Holiday, though.
I'm just talking. It does have something to do with you saying whether or not the Bulls can get 2 second round picks for Justin Holiday. It has a lot to do with that. And that's why, another reason why, my answer is no. The Bulls are not getting 2 second round picks for Justin Holiday. Not going to happen.
Then what are you getting for him?
Maybe one.
Maybe one. That's ridiculous.
You guys are killing me, man. It's Hayes and Philly. I do not understand why you guys just don't shut up about trading the Holiday kid, man. Nobody cares. He's not a good player. Nobody in the NBA wants him. Why would anybody trade for him? He's fucking terrible. Stop talking about him. Nobody cares. Nobody wants him.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.